Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All right, so I know you want to hear the full Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer spot. We teased you before the news, and if you missed the snippet, here's how bad things are looking for the Republicans as of today. Even Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is believed to be in a competitive race for his own seat in Kentucky, competitive enough that his campaign posted this commercial of interest to New Yorkers.
This is Charles Schumer, the far-left senator from New York. He wants to pick Kentucky's next U.S. senator. How? You've already seen hundreds of ads by radical groups attacking Mitch McConnell. Guess who's helping to make them? It's Schumer, a leader of these outside groups. Schumer's pledged to spend big bucks to make you vote the way he wants. So, how does Schumer vote? Bada-bing, bada-boom. He votes for amnesty for illegal aliens, even convicted felons, and against requiring a photo ID to vote. And Schumer supported the vicious personal attack that called a four-star general a traitor. Schumer also proposed spending $1 million of your tax dollars to open a hippie museum in New York. Charles Schumer. Amnesty for illegal aliens, even convicted felons. Attacking our generals. A hippie museum? And this guy wants to put a New York senator in Kentucky? Forget about it.
I'm Mitch McConnell, and I approve this message.
Yes, he did. And I thought you might get a kick out of that because the New York reference. Note that that ad never mentions the actual Democratic candidate in the race, whose name is Bruce Lunsford. And by the way, if you want to see that Chuck Schumer in Kentucky ad, it's our lead web video pick this week. Go to WNYC.org and click on video. That was a web ad. In the presidential race, pundits are predicting anything from an easy win for Obama to an historic Electoral College blowout tomorrow at this point, as the race does not appear to be tightening much in the last few days, as often happens toward the end of a campaign. But let's not take anything for granted. Most of the country still has the only poll that counts ahead of us. So we begin this morning with Mark Halperin, who writes the political blog The Page for Time Magazine, and syndicated Washington Post columnist, Washington Post Writers Group columnist Marie Coco. Hi, Mark. Hi, Marie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Marie, I thought something big would break in the final week of the campaign that would, if nothing else, completely inflame the media. Maybe something like this report about an illegal immigrant Kenyan aunt of Obama that surfaced over the weekend, but earlier and bigger. And it never happened. And the race, to my eye, is kind of easing to its conclusion rather than, you know, crescendoing to a polarizing peak. Does it look that way to you?
Yes, that's a very good description of it. I think that the mega event of this campaign occurred in mid-September when the Bush administration asked for a $700 billion bailout of Wall Street. And at that point, around mid-September, September 15th, September 17th, this race was effectively tied. It was tied in all the battleground states. McCain was actually ahead in Ohio. He was leading in Florida. Barack Obama, according to some of the data, was underperforming among key demographic groups that are important in those industrial battleground states, the famous bitter white working class voters. That was the state of the race on September 15th. It was effectively all tied up, and Obama was having the kind of difficulty gaining traction that a lot of Democrats had worried about during the primary campaign and immediately thereafter. The following weekend, we learned that $700 billion in taxpayer money, this is the shorthand for it, it's obviously more complicated than that,
sure,
but we learned that $700 billion in taxpayer money was going to go bail out Wall Street, and that was pretty much the end of John McCain. Both the fact that it had to occur, that the bailout had to occur, and the way he handled it, McCain, that is, really just threw the bottom right out, I think, of the McCain campaign.
So, Mark Halperin, do you think it was really tied on September 15th when all that started happening and McCain just fumbled? I mean, you know, David Brooks was here last week. He said, really, the race was over 9 months ago because the fundamentals of the economy even before this so favored the Democrats. But the polls were tied. A little after the Republican convention, John McCain was a little bit up So do you think he really just kind of threw it all away over the financial crisis?
40 days ago, I made John McCain the front runner, not just tied, but I thought he was more likely to win, even in the environment we're in now. I think three things happened with the financial crisis. First of all, it pushed bad economic news front and center, ensured that that would be the dominant issue through Election Day, and it's an issue on which Democrats have an advantage historically and this year. Second, it put President Bush back in the news day after day, and the McCain campaign, or rather the Obama campaign, has been predicated on putting George Bush in the news. They've done it mostly through their paid advertising, but this gave them a greater than two-week run where President Bush was coming out every day and talking about the economy. They couldn't have scripted that any better if they'd tried from the Obama point of view. And then finally, the way the candidates handled themselves. I think John McCain, traditionally we say there are three things that matter where real voters pay attention, busy people who don't follow this day to day: the selection of a running mate, the convention acceptance speech, and the debates. And John McCain performed less well by a pretty big margin, I think, than Barack Obama in all three of those. But then we had a fourth this year, the outside intervention of the economic crisis, where John McCain handled himself disastrously and Barack Obama was quite good.
Also with us now is Robert George, New York Post editorial writer, and he has a blog called Ragged Thoughts. Robert, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, Brian. Thank you. Thank you for letting me be here.
Welcome back.
Just following up on what Mark said, I think the economic crisis also did something else to John McCain. One of the biggest bits of advantage he had over Obama was the idea of leadership. Particularly, most people obviously thinking of that in the context of foreign policy, national security. But because he didn't seem to get his bearings on how to speak to the economy and talk about that, that also ended up undermining the leadership advantage he had as well. Whereas Obama, just by having a press conference with people like Paul Volcker, Robert Rubin, and so forth, he suddenly seemed, I think, in the average voter's eyes, as somebody who at least had some kind of an inkling of what was going on.
Here is a bit of how the campaign trail did sound the last few days, and it's still largely about Joe the Plumber.
I don't know when they decided that they wanted to make a virtue out of selfishness.
Now he's saying that if you don't want to pay higher taxes, you're, quote, selfish. You see, he views higher taxes not in economic terms, but in moral terms.
And, of course, the implications around Joe the Plumber, that's when the taxes thing really became so front and center as the centerpiece of the McCain endgame. And Marie Coco, I guess he must have decided that taxes on Joe the Plumber is his best closing argument.
Absolutely. And in fact, I'll tell you why. First of all, if you look at some of the polling that is done around public attitudes, public issues, not this head-to-head horse race stuff, people still do have just a very difficult time willingly agreeing to pay higher taxes. That's just a general point. And what you see constantly in some of this core attitude data is a reluctance to pay more to support government. So you'll hear McCain, you'll hear all Republicans, you're going to hear a lot of this, frankly, when the new Congress reconvenes. You're going to hear this, more taxes for more government. And the reason you're going to hear it is that even Democrats, if you look at this data, you see that even Democrats and independents are distrustful of government. They continue to believe that government does not work well. In fact, it has grown quite a bit worse during the Bush administration, because people have seen government apparently fail time and time again, whether it was in the way the Iraq War was conducted or the way Katrina was handled. The confidence in government had slowly been rebuilt during the Clinton years, but it has basically collapsed again. And so what you're going to hear, I think, from the Republicans, it is a good argument for John McCain to the extent that he has any, but what you're going to hear, I think, increasingly going forward under a possible Barack Obama presidency is this idea of higher taxes and bigger government. And the reason you're going to hear it is that it resonates even with self-described Democrats and independents.
Now, listeners, we're collecting your predictions on our website for election night surprises. Predict an election night surprise to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. It can be about presidential race. It can be about a particular state. It can be about the way the Senate and the House wind up. Anything. We're collecting your predictions on our website for election night surprises. Predict one at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Mark Halperin, we haven't mentioned Sarah Palin yet. And here's a thought experiment. What would be different today if McCain had rolled the dice the other way and created the McCain-Lieberman party, the real, you know, maverick new centrist team, one from each party? What do you think would be different? Anything?
Well, it's impossible to say. I don't believe it was plausible to pick someone as liberal as Joe Lieberman to be the Republican nominee. I don't believe there are many people I respect who disagree with this, but I don't believe Joe Lieberman would have been nominated by a Republican convention whose delegates are 80% pro-life and care a lot about the issue. So I don't think it's plausible. I think if it had been plausible, McCain would have picked him. And therefore, to say what would have happened after that, I think it's impossible to know. I think there were other picks that would have been better. And I also think there are a lot of ways to think about how Sarah Palin could have been a more successful pick. She had a very successful first few days, but I think after that, the strategy of introducing her to the country was a failed one.
Any disagreement, Robert George?
No, not really. I think it's more interesting to say what would have happened had he picked, say, a Mitt Romney or a Tim Pawlenty, if the economic crisis then happens. You've got a couple of people, a couple of governors who can speak about the economics in a way that would have, I think, enforced McCain's message. While with some of the distractions with Palin made it a little bit harder for him. I think, though, what we ended up seeing is, though, that the early days of Sarah Palin, when she was first introduced, were absolutely great, fantastic. And then, of course, you had the kind of disastrous Katie Couric stuff and so forth in the middle. But her speeches and her appearances on the stump in the last few days, I think, have certainly, elevated her standing. Certainly within the party, and I think on balance, she is going to be she still ends up looking strong going forward 4 years from now in a mix of people that will include you know Mike Huckabee and Jindal and other people like that.
Marie, early voting, people like it. Does it have any partisan or demographic implications? We're certainly seeing a huge plus for Obama in the early voting. Some of the numbers of total voters is staggering. I'm not sure even, you know, we in the media expected to see almost half the people in Colorado perhaps voting before Election Day, things like that. What do you think about all this?
Well, I can tell you, I live in Virginia, where early voting ended on Saturday evening at 5 o'clock. I know a good number of people who waited 2 hours in line to do their early ballot. So it didn't really cut down on lines. It just spread them out over several days. I think that the early voting, all of the data I've seen is that it has been favoring Senator Obama. However, I think it's been uneven. I personally went on Friday to an early voting site in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is considered probably the swing most crucial county in Northern Virginia in terms of how this election is going to swing. And while I was there, I don't know how many voters I interviewed, but they were almost all intending to vote for Obama. But it's, you know, it's very hard to tell what that means, and I will tell you why. The Obama campaign has been completely brilliant at a couple of fundamentals here. One is their field game. They have something like 70 field offices in Virginia, which is unprecedented. And you hear this in state after state, that they've invested incredible amounts of resources into the field on-the-ground operation. The other thing is that his voters all along have been shown to be more enthusiastic. So what you're getting out here in this early vote is people that, frankly, I would have expected to be Obama voters. The Democrats have been much more enthusiastic than Republicans all year long. That was true even in the primaries. I don't see, electorally, based on where the polling is, I don't see a map to an Electoral College victory for John McCain. But I think you can be a little bit deceived by the early voting into thinking it's going to be a total Obama blowout. I don't think that necessarily means that. I think what it might mean is, A, Democrats have been energized, and B, he's got one heck of a field operation.
Mark Halperin, I saw you on ABC This Week yesterday, where you and George Will and everyone else on that roundtable was predicting an easy Obama win in the mid to high 300 electoral vote range. And you did it, but you also expressed some discomfort with this major media predictions game. How come?
Well, I just don't see the upside as great as the downside. I think it's bad to discourage voters about who are supporting Senator McCain, or to maybe give people on the other side an overly high sense of confidence or complacency. So I'd rather not participate, but when asked to participate, and guns are put to my head, I sometimes do.
And let's talk about the Senate. We played that Mitch McConnell ad, and it's funny for New Yorkers because of the Chuck Schumer focus of it, and listeners are writing in on our webpage. One person said that ad had shades of anti-Semitism, might even look more that way when you see it visually, and it is on our website at WNYC.org. Click on video for our video picks. Someone else wrote, that ad is great. He's running against a crude New York stereotype from 50 years ago. But, Mark, I think the real news here is that Mitch McConnell is having to defend his seat at all in Kentucky, of all places, and with his record and status in the Republican Party against Bruce Lunsford, who's the actual Democrat running in the race. Talk about this in national context.
Well, when I drive through Kentucky, most voters want to talk about it, not the economy or the war in Iraq, but how much they dislike Chuck Schumer. It's a huge issue in Kentucky. Look, Mitch McConnell is a leader. He's well-funded. He's the guy he's running against is not a particularly well-known figure, but he is having some trouble. I suspect he'll win unless there's a national tidal wave. You see cases all over the country of Republicans who are endangered, and Congress is unpopular, but for reasons that I still don't quite understand fully, the voters don't seem to want to take it out on the Democrats who control Congress, but on a lot of Republicans. I think Republicans are going to have either a very, very bad day or a disastrously bad day. If they lose Mitch McConnell, it will fall into the latter category. But you see someone like John Sununu, senator from New Hampshire, a Republican, first term, a rematch against the former governor, Gene Shaheen. He works hard. He knows his state well. He doesn't take his job for granted. He's raised a lot of money. He's known he would have a tough fight, and he's likely to lose in this race, not the kind of incumbent senator who you normally see go down. So it is a very tough year everywhere, every region of the country. Democrats are going to win Senate seats, and they may win even enough to get to that 60, although I think that's an overrated goal. But in the end, it is about George Bush, and having an R after your name now is a problem because of the presidency of this man.
Robert George, what will it mean if we have a Democratic president and a highly Democratic Congress?
The sky is falling. I think there's a movie coming out in the next few, couple of months called "The Day the Earth Stood Still." I think it's going to be obviously from a Republican perspective rather disastrous. Difficult to say the least because of concerns over taxes, spending, and so forth. My sense is though that Obama's main sensibility is going to lead him to try and tamp down some of the extreme elements within his own party. I would say that early on there are going to be certain things that will be passed as a matter of course, such as the union voting issue, which a number of conservatives are concerned about.
That's a secret ballot within votes to unionize, right?
That's exactly right. I think that's going to be an example of a vote that it'll be very easy for them to get to pass through, given the huge majorities that they're going to have. I have a feeling that my gut tells me that Obama is going to be trying to be more temperate on the bigger issues, such as the taxes and the spending. I mean, it will be very interesting to see if he is going to be able to convince his own Democratic majorities that while they may be able to have a little bit of leeway on the tax side, that the spending is going to have to, there's going to have to be some kind of restraint from it, at least until that we get out of this the early parts of this recession.
Yeah, and Marie Coco, it is kind of, it's almost anachronistic to hear the debate at the end of the campaign being about marginal income tax rates and capital gains tax rates. Not that it's not relevant, but it seems like a pre-financial crisis kind of debate. Even the New York Times editorial page, which obviously is endorsing Obama, has come out and said to Obama, look, this is actually not the time to raise taxes into the teeth of this, what's soon going to be officially a recession. And many of the House Democrats elected in 2006, when they took the majority, were relatively conservative Democrats. So do you see conflicts, tension, push and pull, whether it's a more conservative block of congressional Democrats pushing Obama in a direction, or Obama having to pull the more liberal wings of his congressional party in a direction, if it really winds up with Obama elected and a Democratic majority in both houses?
I see a lot of push and pull, and I will say, first of all, when we talk about tax increases, the tax increase that Obama has consistently talked about is letting the Bush tax cuts expire for those who make over $250,000 a year. Now, the key word there is expire. They don't expire until 2010. So even under his own, if you take him at his word, he's not going to do anything with that until they expire in 2010. And Charlie Rangel, by the way, the chief of the Ways and Means Committee, the New York Democrat, also has said he's not going to fool with it until 2010. So that's sort of factual point number one. Point number two I would make is that many of the House seats that the Republicans are that the Democrats are going to pick up on Tuesday are by definition Republican districts. They're either districts where Republicans are retiring and there's an open seat. That is actually the case in my own congressional district. There's an open seat, which is almost certain now to go to the Democrat. And this is true in just about every case where they're going to make a pickup. It's a vulnerable Republican or it's a retiring Republican. And so what that means is that those districts are fairly closely divided. And as we all know, Brian, the first goal of every member of Congress is to get reelected. So you have that going on as well. These are not liberal Democrats necessarily who are going to be elected. They're people who showed an ability to win in a swing district that was previously represented by a Republican. And number three, and I have to say this with a great deal of disappointment, as somebody who has supported universal health care for years, I think, frankly, Barack Obama has set things up so that he won't get it. And the way he has set it up in his campaign is to say, I will start with children. Well, that to me, as I look at the congressional back and flow, that to me means what they will get is an expansion of the SCHIP children's health program in the states and possibly nothing more. He has said that's his highest priority. The Democrats were unable to get an SCHIP expansion past President Bush's veto pen last year. The Republicans made it a test case for so-called socialized medicine and trotted out all their arguments against it. And I fear, as somebody for whom healthcare has been a very important issue for me in all of my work and my writing for the past 15 years, mm-hmm. that that's basically all the Democrats are going to get.
That's Marie Coco, who is a columnist these days with the Washington Post Writers Group, syndicated around the country. And we're almost out of time with this panel, which also includes Robert George from the New York Post editorial page and Mark Halperin from Time Magazine. Mark, just very briefly, do you agree with Marie's assessment of what's going to happen to health care?
Well, I suspect what he'll do because of the economic situation and because of the difficulty of it is to try to do children, try to do prescription drugs, importation, to try to do something with Medicare providers and Medicaid providers and save an attempt to do universal or near universal for his second year or perhaps a second term.
I'd have to agree with that, because if you keep in mind that it was trying to go for the long ball, if you will, in Bill Clinton's first 2 years, which basically helped hand over the Congress to the Republicans. I think one thing that Democrats have learned is incrementalism is it may be a better way to go. So both because of cost and spending issues, they're not going to be able to go for the big package, and also basically they don't want to overreach as they did back in 93 and 94.
Now, Robert, before you go, just real brief, since you're also covering local stuff for the New York Post, are we going to have a Democratic state senate here for basically the first time in 70 years in New York State?
It's going to be very, very close. It looks like I think State Senator Surf Maltese is probably the one that's most in danger. And if he goes down, yes, there will be, because it's only a one. It's essentially a one-seat a Democratic Republican majority right now. So I would say it's a slightly better than 50. I'd say maybe a 60% chance that yeah, it'll be a Democratic State Senate.
And if there's an all-Democratic state legislature and Democratic Governor David Patterson, do you see the same kind of dynamic as you all were just talking about between Obama and the Congress?
Not necessarily so, because the state in New York, we're looking at a $12 billion deficit next year, and possibly as much as $48 billion over the next 4 years. And that that situation is going to keep, I think, the legislature a little bit locked in terms of what they might want to do. In fact, I think David Patterson actually has his fingers crossed that the state Senate may actually stay Republican, and which would give him a little bit more flexibility in trying to keep spending down.
Huh. Well, a little thing called the voting is yet to come. New York Post editorial writer Robert George, he also blogs at Ragged Thoughts. Mark Halperin, who writes the political blog The Page for Time Magazine, and syndicated Washington Post Writers Group columnist Marie Coco. Thank you all very much for joining us. I'm sure it's a busy day for all of you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll check in with some of that early voting in Colorado. It's so fascinating that almost half the people in that state might vote before what we traditionally call Election Day. But we'll look at it in the context of suppression and fraud and the fears that people have about what long lines and other things might mean for whether your votes will count. And then we'll take a break from all this, and we'll talk about what the calorie posting law is doing to your diets here in New York City. Stay with us.